Say it right now, and I should have said this a long time ago when I saw this coming. Sometimes a team just has it. They got that magic dust, and the Mets got some of that right now, and they're going to be a pain in the neck, even for the Phillies this weekend, and they have four against Philadelphia next weekend at Citi Field. That's seven games against the best team, and the Phillies haven't clinched yet, and they still want to win the top seed. This will not be easy, but the Braves play the Dodgers this weekend, too, so the Dodgers are going to play hard in Atlanta, but I think the Mets have a very good chance to make the postseason. I think they will. And then I think in postseason play, at least in that wild card round, when they're going to get Milwaukee, Mets, or they get Atlanta, I mean, they might get Arizona, San Diego, who knows? But in that scenario, whether it's Mets, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Padres, Atlanta, those five teams, I think the Mets are going to advance. I think they're going to be in a divisional round. We'll analyze that when we get there, but I think the Mets are getting in the divisional round.
All right, we're back. New visitor to the show, New York Mets beat reporter for The Record at North Jersey, Andrew Tredenick, at Andrew_Tred, and he's joining us right now. Andrew, welcome to the program. Appreciate a few minutes. Last 2 weeks of the season, it's go time, and you're part of it covering the Mets there at The Record. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
So, you know, it's funny, you get down to this point of the year and there's really nothing more about money you could talk about, deals, the offseason, roster moves. It's either you have it or you don't. And, you know, as fun as the Mets have been, as much mojo as they've had, you know, a couple of disappointing losses. They play a good Phillies team. Anybody could have lost those ball games. Going into the final couple of weeks, it seems like, you know, certain guys, whether it be Reed Garrett in the bullpen, you know, maybe a Mark Vientos hitting a wall, Edwin Diaz losing another game. He's probably been responsible for about 10 losses this year in one way or the other, which is a far cry from a couple of years ago. You know, I said a couple of weeks ago, it's going to be Mets mojo versus Braves pitching, even with all the injuries. And every time you think the Mets have that mojo, a Diaz blown save, a tough loss here, you know, despite the outing by David Peterson. So I don't know if it's a harbinger of things to come over the final couple of weeks. You now have Lindor injured. But as we all, I guess, thought all along, it's going to come down just like to an NBA game to the final buzzer. And it might just come down to that Atlanta series a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. It seems like, as you mentioned, with the mojo, you had that win with the Blue Jays series finale being no hit. They put up six runs. They come out in the series opener against the Phillies, put up an 11 spot. You're like, okay, maybe the offense has found its legs a little bit. You know, they score four early yesterday, and then things kind of come crashing down there. Bryce Harper, you know, some of those not necessarily more familiar names from the Phillies playing villain. And then again today, you know, obviously David Peterson pitches a gem. Starting pitching is as seemingly kind of lifted this team up for the last few weeks here. And then it gets down to the wire and Diaz comes in, gives up, you know, a base runner. All of a sudden he's on second base and the rest is history. So, you know, every time it seems like there's some good momentum, you know, they won the series with the Blue Jays. This was a tough one. And now they're really going to have to take care of business this week against the Nationals, before they welcome in the Phillies again next weekend, starting on Thursday. So,
and it's interesting, you've been around the team. I mean, I don't know if this is the first you've heard about a back issue with Lindor, who's now talking about it. You know, clearly he was a little off. You could see that watching from home. I don't know. I mean, he's going for MRI. That's always ominous. There's not a scenario where you got to feel good about the last couple of weeks without Lindor, despite the resiliency of this club, but you certainly would think they can navigate a Nats series without him. But, you know, at this point, you know, talking about MVP with Lindor versus Otani, you may get to see that over the next couple of games, unfortunately, because look, without Lindor, what are they, 0-2 now? So might be a little bit of a, you know, I guess, piece to vote on when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, a little bit worrying. This is a guy that played through a broken finger 2 years ago, you know, didn't miss a game when his wife had a child. And then, you know, obviously missed yesterday's game. You know, as he always does, it seems, you know, posts up, he's in the lineup the next day, but this time he couldn't get through the game. I think that's something that's, you know, kind of troubling moving forward. And you look at this infield now, it's a totally different thing than it was, you know, just a few weeks ago. You know, you had Jeff McNeil kind of as that piece. You could use him, you know, in the outfield. Obviously now we have, you know, kind of learning a little bit about what Luis Angel Acuña is capable of. Vientos has had some moments. He had the walk-off home run, but it seems like, you know, like you mentioned, is he hitting kind of a wall, you know, four strikeouts today. And you really need Pete Alonso, you know, who's not had nearly as good of a season as he would have liked in a contract year. He needs to kind of set the bar for this team, especially with where the infield is at. And obviously Iglesias has come up clutch time and time again, plays tremendous defense, but I mean, now there's even more onus on him to perform. So we'll see what this injury is with Lindor and if he has to miss any time. Obviously, you would think that he's going to push as hard as he can to get on the field. But it was kind of troubling that, you know, we've become so accustomed to him going out, you know, a day after an injury, a broken finger. And then, you know, today he wasn't able to get through it. So we'll see what happens, you know, when we learn tomorrow with the MRI, what we're kind of dealing with.
I mean, that's between Lindor and McNeil, those losses. And let's assume Lindor might be just a couple of games, you know, maybe going into the weekend against the Phillies. Those are two elite offensive players since the All-Star break. It's taking a lineup that has been good, but let's face it, not a lot from Nimmo and Alonso the last couple of months. Not a lot from JD Martinez since July 1st. A lot of that production with JD Martinez was in the month of June. Lindor and to a certain extent McNeil, when he got hot, were carrying this team offensively. It really, you just said it, Alonso and Nimmo, really, and he came Nimmo with the big home run on Friday. They need to revert back to and I don't know if it's too late, to who you wanted them to be. In a lot of ways, Nimmo to me is more disappointing. And I don't know if it's because he's no longer in the leadoff spot and he's batting more in an RBI position. I mean, the power has been there. It's obviously dropped off a little bit with his slump over the last month or so. But his on-base percentage is a lot lower. This is not the player that we've seen largely throughout his career, even before he got the big contract. He was always a high on-base guy. He had a little bit of pop, but it was always about getting on base and run creation. And I almost feel, and I don't know if it's the power and the home runs, and maybe it's an anomaly, he's kind of gotten away from that. And it's huge because they really need him now. And Alonso, the Lindor situation, without McNeil a lot at this point.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, Brandon Nimmo is a huge piece. When they went on that run month of June, he was right there in the middle of it, you know, had arguably one of the, you know, was kind of their MVP of that month. I think he was in the running for player of the month. And now even more so needs to kind of step up. Another guy, Francisco Alvarez, is maybe turning the corner. He's going to be another important piece, you know, for the offense with some of these guys trying to, like Acuña, if he's in the lineup, trying to get his legs under him. Tyrone Taylor had that home run today. But yeah, Nimmo is the guy that you kind of counted upon kind of coming into the year as maybe that third offensive weapon behind Lindor and Alonso. And outside of that month, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, he's kind of struggled, you know, for a long stretch here. There's been, you know, kind of peaks and valleys, some moments, but, you know, they need him to be that guy that was, you know, the third best or the best offensive player now. So we'll see what happens. If he can turn it around, obviously he's been searching what seems like for weeks now, you know, even, you know, coming out and saying how he felt terrible at the plate. So we'll see if maybe the few days ago, if he can kind of turn that into a strong few weeks here down the stretch.
.884 in the second half, .566 OPS. It's amazing. As I'm talking to you, I pop it up. It's something that hasn't been talked about, how bad Nimmo has been. On a positive note, though, when you look at what Peterson did today, I mean, everybody talks about Manaea and obviously Severino. He kind of is who he is, Severino. He'll give you 6-7 innings. He'll give you really dominant starts, but he's also a guy that I think you could rely on more, unlike Manaea, who is pushing himself into, at least for a small sample size, into an ace conversation. I think Severino falls more into a really solid number three. But Peterson, they keep talking, and I've talked about it, the peripherals. The guy has peripherals that indicate he should have a much higher ERA, maybe as much as two runs higher. Sometimes he falls behind. He goes to a lot of three and two counts. But I have to say, this was a real test. The Red Sox was an impressive outing. He had a bad outing in Toronto. You're allowed a stinker. Today, he has to go into Citizens Bank Park. Alec Baum is back. You're on the road, a tough team. Granted, they sometimes have brownouts like the Mets offensively, the Phillies, but that's a tough lineup on the road in a pennant race. And he goes out there and pitches them into the eighth inning. Now, maybe they, you know, Mendoza might have pushed them a little bit. I don't really mind that at the bottom of the order. And he got the big out against Schwarber, which I think ultimately is what they were looking towards, mm-hmm. is that Schwarber at bat, which I can't then criticize Mendoza at that point. I got to tell you everything, and then we'll see what Tyler McGill on. I know they're trying to avoid pitching him against some of the better teams. We'll see if he could, you know, kind of take the momentum from his DeGrom-esque performance in Toronto. And all of a sudden, these two young pitchers that have been so frustrating, big plays down the stretch, and maybe giving you something for next year, too.
Yeah, I think David Peterson especially has proven himself, you know, just the confidence that he's pitched with, you know, pretty much since he came back from the injury, you know, especially over the last maybe 2 months or so. It's been really a sight to behold, something that I don't think any of us kind of saw coming, you know, where he was last year, kind of struggled with his command, back and forth between the majors and the minors, moved to the bullpen. I mean, but where he's gotten since, you know, since he had the hip surgery in the off season, I think it was a few starts back where he was just kind of throwing fastballs by guys. And I was like, where's this been? Like, you know, he was a guy that kind of relied on his, right, you know, ground balls and his slider to kind of strike out guys. But I think he's made a case, if they make the playoffs, you know, to be maybe that third guy, I don't know, behind Manaea and Severino.
Quintana all of a sudden is making his play, which is funny because everybody was ready to write Quintana off, and now all of a sudden he's stepping up, and people forget he was a big part of the Cardinals making the postseason a couple of years ago and pitched into the sixth inning in a scoreless game against the Phillies and Zach Wheeler, and would have won that ball game, I believe, if the Cardinals bullpen didn't blow it. So Mets actually, ironically, Andrew, you've been around the club. I did not expect here on September the 15th to be talking about solid starting pitching, possibly getting into the seventh or eighth inning. You know, I the offense has been pretty much what we thought it was. It's really been the bullpen, which has had all these different iterations, that has not held up its end of the bargain. And you have to wonder, are the bright lights too big for the bullpen? Garrett blows the game the other day. Yeah. Danny Young, I know that he's got these great peripheral numbers, the whiff rate and all that stuff. He drives you crazy when you know he's jittery on the mound. He's throwing balls. Like he gets it done, but he's not a guy that I feel high leverage. Buto has taken a step back with his command. Yeah. Maton has been good, but he's always one, you know, hanger away from a bad outing. Same thing with Ryan Stanek. It really comes down to Diaz, and I had this question a couple of weeks ago on the show, is like, hey, you're making $20 million a year. You got to get that out. You got to get that job done. And he almost blew a save earlier in the road trip. That ball falls short at the wall.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
We're talking about another heartbreaking loss. We know he's been awful year. The velocity is back to where you'd expect it. Throwing more fastballs. It's weird because he goes from having poor velocity, poor command. He fixes the command. The velocity's still not there. He gets the velocity and the command. Now is his choice, his decision-making is off. He just hasn't been able to put it all together. Like, it's always something, whether it's decision-making, command, velocity. He's got his whisper behind the plate in Alvarez today. It's really, it's amazing because in 2019 it happened in a different way. They may not make the postseason again because of Diaz. That's twice in 5 years, which
it's
is really
something
amazing.
Something I'm not sure is brought up as much as maybe it has been. Like today, something that he really struggles with is controlling the base running. And if a guy gets on base, all of a sudden he's on second. And then there's more pressure to, you know, avoid a base hit. Castellanos came into the day with only 8 stolen bases. You know, he gets on, he's on second, and then all it takes is a base hit, you know, a little blooper kind of into the gap. So, yeah, I mean, it's with the bullpen, it's kind of interesting. It's, you know, we've seen really strong performances from guys like Stanek and Maton. But then they have, you know, when the moment, you know, kind of arrives in a critical moment, they kind of suffer, you know, and they're the guy that kind of has to wear it. Diaz, we've seen that, you know, a number of times. So, and then you look at, you know, you look at the veteran core with Diaz, Maton, and Stanek. Those were guys that, you know, I'm sure that Stearns kind of brought in with the hopes that they could anchor the pen. And then, like you touched on, it's a lot of guys that are doing it for the first time or experiencing, you know, the high leverage moments and the high leverage moments of the season. And, you know, they haven't been able to kind of rise up, whether it's, you know, Reed Garrett, who had a tremendous opening to the season. We're seeing maybe a little bit more of a Reed Garrett from last season, you know, when he was kind of just trying to earn his spot. And, you know, in those high leverage spots. And Buto, a guy that's a starter who's kind of feeling it out. I know Carlos Mendoza has just touched on how difficult it is to get used to pitching in those high leverage moments day after day when you're used to pitching every 5 days. So, yeah, I mean, that's something to keep an eye on, especially with how good the starting pitching has been. You would hope that the bullpen can kind of hold up their end of the bargain here down the stretch.
You've been around the club covering the club, and it's as we're talking and that's why, maybe mojo is the wrong word. It makes it sound like they're this like miracle team. I wouldn't call them that, but they've played at 100 win pace for more than half the season, which every bit as good as that 2022 club. Mm-hmm. And there's some similarities. Maybe they don't have the names DeGrom and Scherzer in the rotation, but the starters are pitching about what those guys did at that point in their careers that year. You have an offense that's very similar with the brownouts and scoring just enough. You're not getting the same seasons out of Alonso and Nimmo, of course, but they found a way to look the same in terms of the total production. And then maybe the bullpen's dropped off a little bit. That's certainly starts with Diaz. But what's interesting is when you go to the Baseball Reference page, when you look up and down this roster, the fact that they're here, not just because of where they were in May, but you just don't have elite performances really anywhere outside of Lindor. Think about that. He's the only one that is having a career season. All right, you want to talk about Peterson? Let's put him aside. That's more of a secondary, a component guy. All right, maybe not now. He's a core starter, but no one else is having a career year or putting up crazy numbers or doing anything. It's weird.
The only person would be maybe Mark Vientos. He's been kind of a godsend for this club. You know, providing
maybe not talked enough. I mean, the defense too today. Did you see the play when he spun around? I mean, this is a guy that I did not think. You know, Beatty had made such great strides. I had no problem with Beatty defensively earlier in the year. And when Vientos took the job, I was like, well, this is going to be a problem. And they were bringing Iglesias in for defense. That's not going to be an option now because McNeil is out. So he's going to have to make the plays. And he started to make the plays. It's amazing. Maybe like Michael Conforto, when Michael Conforto came up and had that knock that he couldn't play defense. And then he turned himself into a pretty decent fielder. Maybe we're seeing something similar there with Vientos.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, you know, coming into the season, it seemed like, you know, even just watching him in spring training, he didn't look nearly as comfortable over there as, I mean, he's just made such tremendous strides over this season. And, you know, I talked with him for a story a few weeks ago, and he had brought up how he has always felt really comfortable at the plate. But he's had a chip over the last few years. I think he's earned the chip on his shoulder defensively, where he's kind of gone to work because everyone was saying, whether it was Epler or Stearns, was like, this guy needs to go back down because he's not ready defensively. So he took that on himself, you know, worked with Lindor in the offseason. And, you know, another thing that he mentioned, which is kind of interesting, was, you know, he's kind of hitting to what he thinks his potential is. But the biggest thing for him, well, the biggest challenge down the stretch for him was he felt that he needed to ensure that he didn't kind of rest on his laurels because of how good of a season he's had. So I don't know, obviously the hitting hasn't been there over the last, you know, week or so. I know he's had some big hits, but as far as the total, he's kind of struggled. So But he's a guy that you kind of come to trust that's going to kind of maybe work out of it. He hasn't had many extended slumps all season long. So, but I would say he's been, you know, aside from Lindor, like you mentioned, a guy that's kind of, you know, definitely had a career year and kind of put himself on the map and has you feeling a lot better about the third base situation moving forward into the future.
His success, the perfect situation, the perfect scenario is you go back to that game-winning home run against Justin Wilson at Citi Field a little over a week ago. There was a number of good takes in that at-bat.
Yes.
And I think as a whole, the team, and Chavez has talked about this, they struggled against breaking stuff. They're a fastball-hitting team. The league knows it. Sanchez was a steady diet of sliders today. You're seeing it more and more. Maybe they get themselves dead into a hitting count. That changes, and I think that goes back to the chase. And I think that's where Vientos is at. I think that's where the team is at. And forget not having McNeil and Lindor. Those are big losses. I think they could survive a little bit with McNeil being out. Lindor being out after the Nats series, I'm assuming he's not going to play the Nats series. That's challenging as you get to Philly. Yeah. And I think the team as a whole, it's really going to come down to them being patient offensively, working counts, getting themselves into hitters counts. Because once they get into those two strike counts, it seems like when they've struggled, it's been those off-speed pitches, a steady diet that does all of them in, including Nimmo. I mean, look at Nimmo with that. And Alonso, that's something that we Alvarez. Haven't seen that. Yeah, Alvarez is a perfect example. Yeah. I don't know if this is just a trend this year, but that's been concerning because I think, and I don't have numbers in front of me, and maybe the numbers will say, hey, it's been very similar to other years, but I feel Alonso is chased more. I feel Nimmo is chased more. I think Vientos this week has chased a little bit. I mean, but that's to be expected. And then look, you're relying on Bader and Tyrone Taylor, and even to a certain degree, Iglesias. These are component guys. It's nice the contributions they have, and it's nice that they could be the hero on any given night. But when they are expected to then do heavy lifting because your stars are not hitting or out injured, that's a problem. That's a problem any time of the season. That's particularly problematic when you're faced with a final, 13 games here of the regular season.
Yeah, and something, you know, you kind of touched on it. That component of that 2022 team, when they were playing so well, I know I always remember them consistently saying, pass the baton, put the pressure on the opposition.
Constant pressure, yeah.
Exactly. So, and you've seen kind of a lot of times, you know, over the last few weeks where all it takes is that pressure to kind of, you know, push them over the line, whether it was like Lindor, you know, hitting that home run, kind of easing the tension a little bit, you know, getting some traffic on the bases, you know, pitchers have to approach them a different way, you know, come into the strike zone a little bit. I think you've seen, you know, when they get base runners on, they're a much more dangerous offense. So down the stretch, like you mentioned, that's going to be really critical to kind of force some of the opponents pitching into tougher spots with the pressure being what it is.
Right. And that's the thing. You'll see them score six runs and they'll put up a sixth spot.
Yeah.
But then they don't do much for the other five or six innings of the game.
You, but, you know, sometimes all it takes is that six run inning.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Absolutely on that whole thing. So what do you think gets this thing done? You have 13 games. 6-7, 7-6 gives you 87 to 88 wins. That puts you in a decent spot. Does it take 90? Because 90 now is 9-4. And 9-4 means they have to play 692 baseball. Now, they've played close to 700 baseball in stretches, but you're asking to do that against the Phillies, the Braves, and Milwaukee. And this point was brought up to me, and I can't remember who brought it up to me, but they're like, hey, the owner of Milwaukee hates Cohen. Wouldn't they love to sell, you know, knock them out that 3 o'clock game 2 weeks from today and send the Mets home? I didn't think of that. I didn't think of that at all. I don't know how the league views the Mets. It's remember when Bobby Valentine was the manager, nobody wanted Bobby Valentine to be successful. They'd actually get up. Bad teams would get up and beat the Mets during the Valentine era down the stretch because they hated Bobby Valentine. I don't know if that's the case here. So what do you think gets it done? Is 88 enough? Do they have to hit the magic number of 90? This is going to be like an NBA game. I've been saying it for a while. It's going to probably come down to the final 15 seconds, and that's going to be those final ball games.
I mean, it's going to be extremely interesting. You look at the Diamondbacks, that's another team that has a tough schedule coming up. They have four against the Brewers. They close the season with the Padres. That could get really interesting. The Mets own the tiebreaker against those two teams.
Good point.
Yeah, I think, you know, you would hope. I think you need to maybe sweep the Nationals and pick up, you know, at least five more wins. So what would that puts you at?
89.
Around 8 wins.
That would be at 89. Yeah, that'd be
which
8
is crazy.
Five.
Where we were, you know, earlier in the season.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think it's really probably going to boil down to that Braves series. You know, the penultimate series of the year, and can you take 2 out of 3, get the tiebreaker on them? Because it seems like whenever the Mets win, the Braves are winning, and then here and there, they gain a ground and they fall back. So I think it's going to be down to the wire here. The Braves have proven, even despite all the injuries that they're going through, that they're going to be right there with all the quality pitching they have. So it's going to be a wild 2 weeks here where every game matters.
The thing about the Mets and the Braves is that when the Mets have won divisions since 06 and 15, the Braves just weren't very good. When they had good teams, the Mets, the Braves were elite, winning 100 plus games. And it was tough to win those divisions, even in 1999. And the Mets have never head-to-head, and I guess the best head-to-head example is 2022, made the big play in the big series against Atlanta. Now, 2022, everyone remembers those final three games in Atlanta where they had Scherzer, they had DeGrom, they had Bassett, they couldn't get the job done. The Braves played at an insane level leading up to that. I mean, everybody, I think it was like 117-win pace. They played like the 0-1 Mariners from Memorial Day onward. And the Mets played pretty good, but not at that pace. Maybe that's a rationalization, but it is what it is. But the Mets couldn't make the big plays when it counted against Atlanta. It's almost like this weight that you thought that the organization was going to have off of them when Cohen took over, with the money, the spending, the new feel. It's not going to completely be eradicated till they win some bellwether series. And the Braves, and beating the Braves, even a compromised Braves team. And I wonder, will Albies be back? Will Riley be back next week? I don't know. I haven't heard anything. You know, that's close with the injuries.
Yeah.
But with all the injuries now, you know, they lose a starting pitcher. It's almost like they have to beat the Braves, or else, hey, you know, you still couldn't get them when they were significantly handing you a handicap like bowling. Even if they make the postseason and they don't finish ahead of the Braves, I wonder how people view them at this point. And I guess it's a two-part statement. A, do they have to make the postseason for this thing to be successful? Let's say they win 88 games after everything they went through and missing now Lindor possibly for a chunk. Is that success because of all things in perspective? Is it a failure because they don't make it over Atlanta? Where do you see, like, does it – forget Lindor making the MVP. Obviously, I think they have to make the postseason for that to happen if he has a shot. But for the Mets, how do you view this season – if they don't make the postseason, assuming they reasonably, it's not like they go winless between now and the end of the year, then that's a disappointment. I'm talking about just going out, playing as good as they can, finishing at 87, 88 wins, and just not getting the job done, falling short.
I mean, if you win three of these, you know, four series, split with the three of these four series split with the Phillies and somehow don't make it, it's kind of hard to argue that this season wasn't a success, you know, especially where they were, 11 games under 500, you know, early in June.
Hair away from a fire sale. I mean, I had come on the air after Memorial Day, said, look, this is not happening. Maybe it's even time to look at trading Nimmo, clean it out. You can't keep going this way. And look, now you've got a foundation. It's amazing how that works. You know,
you feel a lot better about where you are, like I mentioned, with third base, you know, Alvarez has been tough, but you've seen what he's capable of. Lindor being that foundation. It's going to be really interesting kind of how much the team looks similar or different next season, with how many expiring contracts they brought in. Obviously, Alonso being an expiring deal. But yeah, for now, what this team has, you know, how they've kind of meshed together to turn the corner. How much fun this season has been, whether it's Grimace, the OMG, you know, where we were in May thinking, you know, it was a lost season to where we are now competing for, you know, a playoff spot. You know, it didn't look like they were going to have a winning season. Now they could have 90 wins. I think, you know, it's tough because it's going to boil down to these 2 weeks and the narrative should be kind of about the big picture and what this team was able to accomplish where they were. But the goalposts have moved a bit, where it's going to be sour if they don't end up making the playoffs. So it's kind of a little bit of a catch 22, I guess, you know, and with everything this season has been.
And with the Dodgers struggling, Glasnow out, the league is wide open. What baseball is turning into, and I've said it, as a tournament sport. Look at the Phillies. The Phillies will probably finish with about 95 wins. But do you honestly, at that 95 win team, do you feel, putting your Mets blinders off or whatever, you know, covering the team, I'm trying to be as fair as possible here. It's not like in a 5-game set or a 7-game set, I think the Mets can't compete with the Phillies. It's close. I'm not saying they'll beat them. There's probably going to be a lot of games like today that you'd have to sit through. But, I mean, what team in the National League, including the Dodgers, can you say in this short series the Mets can't beat? I'm not saying they can't. They will win every one of them. They could easily get swept in those. It's so close. Arizona's tough. It's truly a tournament sport, and it's parity that I don't think we've seen in the sport. I think all sports in general are trying to get to that parity point. Mm-hmm. And I think baseball has always kind of been that way. But maybe more so than ever, where legitimately teams that are in this like 3 wild card could come out of this like the 2012 Giants or the 2014 Giants, win 87, 88 games and win a World Series. And that's what it's come down to at this point. The division, I don't want to say the division doesn't matter, because it certainly does. But do you have to bust your rear end to win 100 games to get, what, 5 games? That's what you do. Mm-hmm. Or could you win 92, position yourself well, and you're going to have to win big games anyway and get yourself into a World Series, kind of like what the Phillies did. It's interesting. It's really become a tournament sport.
I don't know if you want any part of the 3-game wild card game if you could avoid it.
Sure. I guess the Mets don't have a choice. The Mets don't have a choice. They're either going to play Milwaukee or somebody else. But on the road, and I think the Mets playing on the road is a better play, because I think they play tight at home. I think the fans are tight. I know the fans, maybe Grimace, like you said, and OMG is cleanse the stadium of the negativity from the first week of the season. It was awful there. But I think playing on the road would help this club. Some of the guys' numbers on the road are much better. I mean, Jeff McNeil, before he got hurt, look at his splits. Look at Nimmo's splits. They're awful at Citi Field. Now, I don't know if that's randomness or, you know, I'd have to see how many games they had at home in May versus, I mean, there's a lot of analysis you'd have to go into deeper on that whole dive. But I think them playing on the road, no matter whether it's 3 games, 5 games, I think it helps the Mets. I think it's actually a good thing for them.
Like you mentioned, I think we were talking in the clubhouse a few days ago. I think this is the first time, I might be wrong, but the first time since 2015 or 2016 that there's probably not going to be a team that wins 100 games. So like you mentioned, wide open, Phillies, you know, I think they're leading Major League Baseball right now. So, you know, with the team that's not going to win, going to come well short of 100 wins. So we'll see. And, you know, it's anyone's ballgame. I think we're a little bit more confident about where the starting pitching was, you know, maybe earlier in the season. You weren't sure what a playoff rotation was going to look like. And we haven't even touched on the fact that Kodai Senga could be back.
Interesting.
You know,
that's a great
week.
Point. I don't even want to think about him because he's not there. It's kind of one of those things. Talk kind of to me when he's a reality. Push it down. But that's interesting. And what could he start? Before we get back to talking about the pennant race, why don't you take a swing at Pick'em this baseball season on Underdog? Over 1 million fans across 33 states got in the game last year by making picks on Underdog. Win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on your favorite player stats like strikeouts, total bases, and home runs. I, earlier today, picked total bases for Pete Alonso. I lost. But it's a great way to continue to stay into the game. Pennant race baseball, Mets trying to go and win a wild card. Why not add a little personal connection by going to Underdog Fantasy and making some picks and winning some money? Underdog is super easy to play, and it's even easier to get started. Go to their easy-to-use mobile app or to underdogfantasy.com. Sign up a promo code TALKING. There is a G. TALKING, and Underdog will give you a mystery special pick to use in your first pick'em entry, plus a first-time deposit offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code TALKING with a G, TALKING. Threw off a little bit there. You claim your new customer special of a mystery player pick and your deposit offer. You must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, 19 and older in Alabama and New England, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms do apply. Void in Colorado. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. In New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. Underdog Fantasy, what a great way to play out not only the final couple of weeks of the baseball season. There's NBA, there's NFL every Sunday. There's so much fun here. But for us, here at the Talking Mets podcast, let's get out there and enjoy Mets baseball every night by taking part in Underdog Fantasy and do the pick'em this baseball season, the final couple of weeks. And tell them that Talking Mets sent you by using the promo code TALKING, T-A-L-K-I-N-G. Now back to Talking Mets baseball. What's funny, and I think we'll wrap up here on this, is that this team, let's see their real resiliency. Every time it seems like they're ready to go here, Ho-Senga start, they get the injury. They're starting to play better. Vientos with a great walk-off. How great did that feel, that stadium, after that walk-off? McNeil breaks his hand, which was always that in the back of your head, because anyone who watched that was like, that's it. And now you feel great after this Phillies victory on Friday night, and now Lindor's out. So they've taken the 1-2. I mean, this has been a season that has, you know, I know the Braves have had all their issues, no doubt about it, but it's not been this yellow brick road for the Mets either.
No. Yeah.
Not at all. And every time it goes well, it's that old, I call it the yoke of whatever deal they made after game six in 1986 in that 10th inning in a back room, whatever spiritual baseball god deal, they say, no, 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 the contract's not up yet. And they kind of pull it away. So we'll see. So this is the latest, but every time there's been a good vibe, something has come up that has dampened it a little bit.
And you want to leave Citi Field, you know, with some confidence going into the Atlanta series, especially, you know, I remember 2022, there were some series there in August where you kind of had that foreboding feeling. It was like the Pirates and the Cubs. Tight. You're like, something doesn't feel right down the stretch here. So you want to make sure the vibes are high after your last little stretch here. So we'll see, you know, some big series here at Citi Field coming up this week with the Nationals and Phillies.
So you're over at The Record, North Jersey, at Andrew_Tred, T-R-E-D. Talk to the listeners a little bit about what to expect from you. You guys should be following him on X. And look, the last big guy to come out of The Record was Justin Toscano, and he did pretty well. So you got big shoes to fill here, Andrew. And we had him on the show early on when he first came on, and all of a sudden now he's a star over in Atlanta. So this might be your calling card. It's all, you know, it's only uphill from here. And what a great way to start. Is this, you know, what year is this on the beat for you?
This is my third year. Yeah.
Your third year here.
So yeah.
So you've been here a couple of years. You've seen the good and the bad.
Seen all the iterations.
Yeah, so now it's the time to really take off at this point and kind of, exactly, you know, a postseason appearance here would be great. So what do you got coming up for the listeners to know about?
So, yeah, I'll be at Citi Field all week long, you know, checking in with every meaningful result here. Hope to write some features, maybe about Mendoza and the season that he's had, you know, as a first-year manager, which we didn't really touch on, and just, you know, what the coaching staff and the players have thought about his first season. And yeah, you know, obviously Lindor, that's the big news item. We'll see tomorrow and go from there. I'll be in Milwaukee for the final series. So I know last time they were in Milwaukee, I don't think they were able to celebrate the way they wanted to, because they were still, the Braves were neck and neck with the Braves. So there could be a bigger celebration there in Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
They punched their ticket. So,
And that is an underreported, and I think it'll be talked about more when the season's over, the job that Mendoza has done. I was a big Bucks supporter. I'm glad you're writing about that, because sometimes when the team wins, the manager gets pushed to the background. I think Buck, because of the presence of who Buck was, and because the Mets have struggled so much with managers over really a decade, even at times during the Terry Collins era. And I think now the fact that we're not talking about Mendoza tells you how good of a job he's done. And it is interesting that you're going to look into that. So that's a big thing. And it sounds like you're enjoying covering Mendoza and interacting with him as you've gone along this journey. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, it's been really good. And another thing with David Stearns, he's been really transparent, and that's something that we've, been very appreciative of over this year. He's met with the media. I know the Yankees have trouble tracking down Cashman, but Stearns has seemingly meet it with us, on a monthly or biweekly basis. So that's been really nice too. And as we were touching on with the future, you can kind of feel good as a Mets fan, I think, with what the leadership has shown in their first year. So it's, it'll be interesting to see, where they end up after their first year. So,
well, listen, thanks a lot for coming in on this Sunday, a football Sunday, 2 weeks of fun baseball starting tomorrow night at Citi Field against the Nats. Hopefully Lindor's not out too long. Be well. We'll be hoping to catch up with you maybe even during the postseason. So keep in touch. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Andrew Trudenik. He told me before, I always flub these names. I apologize, Andrew, for that. So at Andrew_Tred, TRED, North Jersey, the record. So we have it there. So, all right, let's take a quick break, wrap up. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Want to thank Andrew Trudenik for coming on the program. I think he did a great job. Continue to check him out over at The Record. Check him out on X, like I said. But as we wrap up here, look, there's really not much more else to say. The Braves are in the middle of the game as we do this show, so they're up on the Dodgers right now. It's still early there. Arizona won, San Diego won. This is going to be a dogfight down to the end, and very much like an NBA game. This is going to go down to the buzzer. I really believe it. It's been such an ebb and a flow, back and forth. And I talked about this. I don't know if it was on Beyond the Mic or it was on a show, but I basically said, look, this is like an NBA game. You get down big early, you make a comeback, you even it up, you go a little bit back and forth, maybe get down by a few points, 5, 6, 7 points, battle back. And now here's the final 2 minutes, and the game is tied, for lack of a better word. And now the best team that executes in the last 2 minutes wins the ball game. And that's what it's all about. And that's what it's going to come down to. And that just earns you the right to get into the postseason. And look, Mendoza has said it best all season. Worry about what you can control, which is beating the Nats over the next 3 games. That's all they can focus on, is beating the Nats the next 3 games. Possibly without Lindor. Might be imperative not to play Lindor over the next few days. Get him the rest he needs so he's healthy, hopefully, for Milwaukee and Atlanta and Philadelphia. The concern you have there is that backs are tricky, and that could be one of those things where all of a sudden he tries to give it a go. Think of like how OG Anunoby tried to give the hamstring a go in Game 7, and he just doesn't have it. And it's a terrible time of the year. As a Knicks fan, I know that there's a lot of fans of other teams in the audience, and maybe teams that aren't even fans, people that aren't even fans of the NBA. But what's happening to the Mets with some of the injuries, and I know the Braves aren't feeling sorry for them because they've had a ton of injuries, is similar to like the Knicks down the stretch with these key players getting hurt, and now it's next man up, and do they have enough to get the job done? As long as they have Lindor, I think everybody felt good now that they may not have Lindor. And look, Acuña is coming in, and what a way to throw the kid into the pennant race, right? Alvarez similarly had the same thing a couple of years ago in 2022, but it was only off the bench and it was the final few games of the season. Here Acuña is going to be asked to sub in for an MVP candidate at a premium position, shortstop, and not only field the position with, he's never going to be like Lindor, but field it competently or above average, but also try to get some big hits there and get on base and make things happen. So it's go time of go time. Ever, like I said, nothing else matters. And really, when you look at the last couple of weeks, it's really going to come down to some of these key players that have been here a while. Nimmo, Alonso, Diaz in particular, getting the job done on both sides of the ball. Those guys helping get it done on offense, getting hot at the right time. Diaz closing the door, proving that he's worth every cent of that big contract. Because right now, he is not pitching like a $20 million a year closer. He's not. And that's the disappointing part of the whole thing. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G. And why don't you subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks in the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, whatever's left of it. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.